Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri. Take it away, guys.
When the door is locked, there's no way out.
All right, now back in making his fifth appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Rams Pro Bowl defensive back Leroy Irvin. Let me give you some background on Leroy. He's from Fort Dix, New Jersey, played his college ball at Kansas, where he's still fifth in all-time interceptions and seventh in tackles, but he's number one in tackles by defensive backs all-time and for a single season. He was a third-round draft pick by the Los Angeles Rams in 1980, and he played in the NFL from 1980 to 1990. All in L.A., except for his last season, which he finished up in Detroit. He was selected to back-to-back Pro Bowls in 1985 and 86, and he was an All-Pro four times in 81, 82, 85, and 86. He holds the NFL record for most punt return yards in a single game with 207 versus the Falcons in 1981. And if all of that wasn't enough, he shares the same birthday as my son. And we are very honored he is with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Leroy, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back
Welcome back on the show. Chris and Bob, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Leroy.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we got you good.
Okay.
Leroy, I got to start by getting your thoughts on your L.A. Rams. They're going to face the Cardinals for a third time this season, split the first two meetings. How do you feel about their chances Monday night?
Man, you know, they got to run the football, dude. I mean, you know, it's how do you go 21 carries, 40 yards, and call that a running attack? And you put the game in the hands of a guy who's never been to the playoff or one playoff game and lost. So I just don't understand the Rams' philosophy offensively. And I think the Rams' defense is a little overrated. They're rated like 20-something against the pass. I know we got Jalen Ramsey, but last week, man, the secondary just looked like they were, you know, in fourth place in the West instead of being the West leaders.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, that's one of the struggles we've had is looking at that Rams defense and all the stars that they have and bringing in Von Miller and obviously Ramsey and Donald and what they've got. It seems like they should be a lot higher ranked than where they're at. When you're watching them play, what do you see?
Well, you know, I see them double teaming Donald every time. I see, Ramsey, you know, he's not lights out like Deion and some of the other guys who are, you know, supposed to be the top cornerback in the league. You can't just put him on. See, when Deion played, they put him on the best receiver and they rolled the coverage away from him and teams still wouldn't throw at Deion. They throwing at Ramsey. When I played, they threw at me maybe 3-4 times a game. They didn't come at me all the time. They're coming at Ramsey too much, make $21 million. I just think that defense is not as good as people say they are. I want the Rams to win. I'm going to the game. Don't get me wrong. I'm a Ram fan, but the Cardinals beat him pretty good last time. So, hey, I don't know. They may have our number.
And Leroy, speaking of when you came in the league, you came in 1980. The Rams at that time are coming off a Super Bowl appearance in 79. What was it like for you trying to make your way onto that team as a rookie when you're trying to go up against guys that just came out of a Super Bowl? You got a Super Bowl roster you're trying to get on.
You know, I was talking to Rod Perry today, right? And Rod Perry was drafted by the Rams in 75, him and Monty Jackson were drafted by the Rams in 75, and then Pat Thomas came in 76. You know, Monty Jackson became an All-Pro, then he got pissed off at management, and they traded him to Oakland, and then Rod Perry and Pat Thomas became All-Pros. So when I came into the Rams, don't forget, we had Nolan Cromwell, All-Pro, Pat Thomas, All-Pro, Rod Perry, All-Pro, and they just came off a Super Bowl appearance. So when I came in, you know, we brought in Kirk Collins, rest in peace, probably one of the best defensive backs I've ever played with. And we got Lucius Smith. So it was very difficult making the team in 1980, but I was in awe of all the stars. You know, Hacksaw Reynolds, a crazy dude. Dennis Era, Jim Youngblood, Jack Youngblood, you know, Johnny Johnson came in with me. We had Farragama. We had, you know, all the guys like I can go on and on and on. But, it was like a dream come true because, you know, I grew up, my dad was in the military, so I grew up basically in Georgia, went to high school, went to school in Kansas, and I always asked the Lord every night, if it's possible, I want to play in the NFL. If I play, can I play 10 years? And if I get to play 10 years, can I play in Los Angeles? And boy, you know it, my dream came true.
Wow. And Leroy, you mentioned Nolan Cromwell a moment ago. What a tremendous career that guy had. What was it like playing alongside him?
You know, I was in college with Nolan. We went to Kansas together. So I knew Nolan in Kansas when we were in Kansas. He was a quarterback. You know, we were in the fifth game of the season. We were ranked eighth in the nation. Eighth in the nation. Nolan was running the wishbone offense for us. And then against, Oklahoma State or someone like that, he got hurt. And we lost six straight games. And we lost five out of the last six games. We finished 6-5 that year. Then Nolan went in the draft, second round to the Rams. And then but he's also a world-class hurdler. Don't forget now, he's a world-class hurdler in track. And I played with three great all-around athletes. Nolan Cromwell, number one, Jerry Gray, number two, and Johnny Johnson, number three.
Bob, questions for Leroy?
Oh, Leroy, man, I could talk to you all night. You know that because I grew up with all those guys. You know, the late game here. In New England, we used to watch the late games from the Coliseum, yeah. Leroy. I mean, man, I'm just getting chills listening to some of these names. I'm going to pick one from you just mentioned Jack Youngblood. I'm looking at some of his numbers, Leroy. I mean, people don't realize this guy had over 150 sacks. Hall of Famer. He was the size of probably a small tight end, these guys, and he played defensive end. Now, we see pictures of him playing with broken bones, broken everything. Talk more about his character. I mean, the Rams drafted him as a first-round draft in 71. Obviously, a very good pick, but what was he like as a man?
Okay, I'm going to tell you something about Jack. You know, when I first got to the Rams, I was in awe of those guys, especially Jack. I called him the John Wayne of football. And I talked to Jack 3 weeks ago. I told him a story again. I always tell him the same story over and over and over again. And that was, I used to sit when I was in preseason, Jack would say, "Don't worry about the mule, just load the wagon." And so that became my rallying cry. I mean, is Jack ready? Let me just load the wagon and ride and let him take me to the victory. So, you know, I listen every game. I stand around Jack before the game for like, you know, warm ups in the locker room right before the game, and then he say it, and I go back to my locker and get ready to go play the football game. His last game, I said, "Damn, Jack, my whole career, I've been listening to you say, don't worry about the mule, just load the wagon," and it really was my rallying cry, and it got me energized to play football because I saw how hurt you were and how much pain you played through, and it was my rallying cry. He said, "Leroy, I'm passing the torch to you. Now it's your turn to say, don't worry about the mule and load the wagon."
That's a great story. And Hacksaw Reynolds, these guys were cult heroes to us here back in the East. And, you know, I think, Leroy, in the past, we've talked about, you had Bud Carson as your defensive coordinator when you entered the league, and everyone we've talked to talks about his genius. You know, what did he mean to you as far as having a pretty long career in the league, and you know, how does he go down in history as a DC?
Well, I think he's one of the greatest of all time. Don't forget now, he was in Pittsburgh when they got them four. When they got three with him and one when he was at the Rams. And our defense, you know, Bud was such a, he invented his own blitz, okay? Let's just be honest. He invented his own blitz, and he was so meticulous. His coverages are so unique and so mind-boggling difficult to learn. And we'd work on a certain coverage all week long, except he forgot if the second back came out of the backfield, who would get him. So game day, he'd come in and say, "Okay, we got to change this because if they release the back, we have nobody to get him." And he'd always do that right before the game. But I tell you, I learned about the NFL real quick with Bud Moore, Bud Carson, because we're in practice one day and I got beat on a post pattern. I was a rookie. It was during the season. You know, we're at Rampart. I got beat on a post route. I think Waddy beat me on a post route. And, Bud, I was just jogging back to the huddle, and Bud was standing in the deep middle of the defense back, you know, way back. I was jogging by. He said, "You know, last person got beat on that route is selling Coca-Colas right now." So he always let me know that it's going to be short-lived in this league if you don't make plays.
Leroy, one of our good friends on this show is former Falcons and Rams quarterback Chris Miller. When you played the Rams and the Falcons, obviously in the same division in the NFC West, so you played against each other twice a year. You had three of your career interceptions off of Chris. Was there something that you picked up about his deliveries, his tendencies, or whatnot that allowed you to have so much success against him?
You know, it comes back to, you know, because early on when Bud was our defensive coordinator, you know, it was Barkowski was the quarterback, you know. And so when Chris came in, you know, we're a veteran secondary, okay? Early on, I had Rod Perry, Pat Thomas, Giant Johnson, Nolan. Then I had Gary Green. So when Gary Green came over, we had Gary Green, myself, Johnny and Nolan, and Vince Newsom. And then Jerry Gray, our future All-Pro, was our third corner, okay? So what we did was we looked for plays that they ran all the time. You know, the patterns they ran all the time. And when we notice those patterns by the splits and stuff, we look at each other, give a hands up or slap on the pants, let us know that, hey, look, this time we got this coverage call, but Leroy, you got green light to jump whatever route you want, because I got you over the top. That's what I tell Johnny Johnson. So Johnny, and he tell Gary Green, hey, look, I'm not going to be in the deep middle because Leroy's taking a chance this time. And it wasn't nothing that the quarterback did. We knew what they were going to do, and we just jumped. We only jumped one or two plays a game, but, you know, those are pretty much how I made all my plays.
And, Leroy, speaking of great interceptions, in week two of the 1984 season, you guys played the Browns. You returned an interception 81 yards for a touchdown in the first quarter. Has to be a happy memory for you.
I tell you, man, you know, I've always loved the Cleveland Browns from Jim Brown days, and, you know, they had some great DBs. And they had some great DBs there. But the only thing I remember about that game was that their dog pound was for real. They were throwing these big-ass dog biscuits at us in the end zone. And all we had to do was we didn't even want to look around. They might hit us in the face. But I remember that game. I think I was holding out or wanting a new contract or something. And I ended up getting one.
And Leroy, we've talked about the great players that you had on your defense, but you had a lot of great players on the opposite side of the ball. I mean, what was it like for you at practice when you're trying to cover guys like Henry Ellard and Ron Brown, Flipper Anderson, Eric Dickerson coming out of the backfield? That had to make practice probably harder than the game.
Yeah, you know, I started out having to cover Willie Miller, Preston Dennard, Billy Waddy. Okay, then I had to cover them guys in my rookie years. And then we got Ellard, one of the best route runners in the game. He taught Flipper Anderson. He taught Torrey Holt, and he taught Isaac Bruce. And then Ron Brown, you know, Ron was really a track guy, you know, and he liked to go deep. So I just knew, well, you know, covering Ron was like covering Willie Gault, you know, they're gonna go deep on you. You know what I mean? And I just played that. I looked at the receivers and I learned each one of them and what their tendencies were. I just took that to me on Sunday because I put them in categories. You know, what kind of route they want to run. And so I remember we were playing against the 49ers in Tokyo in the preseason game. And I told Jerry Rice, I said, Jerry, you go tell Bill you can have all the slants, all the hitches, and all the outs you want. If you come past 10 yards, you belong to me. And so I put guys in categories. Because Jerry Rice is a deep runner, he was the same kind of guy Freddie Solomon. He took Freddie Solomon's place. See, Dwight Clark was the move guy, in the Bill Walsh offense. He ran the slants, the hits, the curls, the outs, and then Freddie Solomon ran the deep routes. Well, Jerry took Freddie Solomon's place, so Jerry ran all the deep routes, and then Dwight Clark ran all the possession routes. Soon they got John Taylor. John Taylor took Dwight Clark's place. Rest in peace, Dwight. You were one of the best you've ever played against.
And Leroy, talking about Jerry Rice, and to your point, I mean, Jerry wasn't a burner. He didn't have the greatest speed out there. What made him such a great wide receiver?
The route running. He never showed you the route. But see, well, how Jerry got by you was people tried to cover everything. They didn't know he was a deep route runner. They thought he was a, they thought because he was slow, ran 4-6. They were, oh, Jerry, he going to run the out. He going to run the curl. He going to run the in. You know, but the 49ers had this route for Jerry. It was a 20-yard curl, in a sense. He lined a route. It's like a Dallas Cowboy did with Drew Pearson. They put him right outside the numbers, and Jerry would run right outside the numbers. About 16 yards, Joe would let it go. And as soon as Jerry turned inside, the ball was there. There's nothing you can do about that route. If you want to cover it, you got to look in the backfield, right? Because Joe is throwing the ball before Jerry even come out of his break. So the way guys got beat, they were trying to cover that route. They were peeking in the backfield, and Jerry just ran right by him.
Bob Moore for Leroy.
Yeah, Leroy, we talk with defensive backs who played in your era very regularly on this show. You know, I know it's a different game now. These guys are still great athletes, Leroy, but we talk about this constantly, the missed tackling. It's a contact game. They don't wrap up anymore. Fundamentals seem to have gone by the wayside for a more physical type game. Does it bother you to see this? And, you know, do you think we'll ever get back to fundamentals in the NFL?
Well, the problem is, you know, here's a simple example. We went to training camp July 10th every summer. We had 2-a-days, shoulder pads and helmets in the morning, full gear in the afternoon, at least 5-6 days a week. When we had preseason games, we would not be in full gear the day before the game. But we'd be in full contact, not when we had shoulder pads and helmets. We were hitting, we were not in full contact. And then when we had full gear on, we were in full contact for almost 6 weeks. 7 weeks, okay? Now, they can't even be in full gear but 2 days a week in training camp. You can't be in training three days a week, and you can't leave with your helmet. And how do you practice tackling? You practice against a dummy. You can't practice tackling when you don't tackle, okay? And that's why the current players, they screwed us around. They screwed us around. We made it easier for them to play longer. Because we sued the owners and won because the concussion lawsuit. These guys are going to the training camp, staying 3 weeks in training camp. And then, I'll tell you a story. I went and watched the Cowboys-Rams scrimmage, right? A scrimmage, no tackling. How are you going to have a scrimmage, no tackling?
Boy.
And so it's in high school now, too. And it's in college now. And it's in Pop Warner now. So you can't blame the players for not being able to tackle, because only time they can really tackle is in game. They can't even tackle in scrimmages no more. So, you know, they're like Brady. Who plays in their 40s? Breeze, Rivers. They would never play in their 40s in the 80s or 70s. They couldn't last that long.
Yeah, it's
good
a different
point.
Game. Sure, yeah. And, you know, for a guy like yourself, Leroy, 11 years in the league, that's above average for sure. You rarely miss games. You just talked about how physical it could get and everything. I mean, now, you know, you're in your 60s. I mean, do you wake up in the morning, Leroy, saying, yeah, I played 159 games in the NFL? How is your health right now?
Well, I had hip replacement surgery 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I had back surgery 10 years ago. May have to have another back surgery. I can only remember things. I'm like someone who had a stroke. I can remember things that happened 20 years ago, but I can't remember what I ate for breakfast this morning. So I definitely pay a price for playing in the game, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I just wish that, the current players would be stiff enough. You know, think about this. Jalen Ramsey makes $21 million a year, right?
Right.
He makes more in a season than our whole team made in 1980, 81, 82, and parts of 83. Think about that.
Crazy.
Wow.
He made more in one season than our whole team made in 3.5. And they couldn't even throw us a bone. They couldn't even say, you guys paved the way for us, took out a hit, and they don't even have to hit no more. They have no 2-a-days. There's no wear and tear in their bodies. We had 5 preseason games. Was physical preseason game. None of that stuff anymore. And what gets me is that these kids and these guys don't appreciate what we did for them.
Leroy, a couple more before we let you go, and we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you, towards the end of your career, another great friend of the show, Jim Everett, came along over there with the Rams and became your quarterback. What was it like playing alongside and practicing against Jimmy?
Jimmy was a big, tall kid from Purdue. You know, he's 6'5". I still talk to Jim, stay in communication. What a great arm he had, great read. He had one of the best offensive coordinators of our generation in Ernie Zampezi. So then he had Flip Ramson, he had Ron Brown, he had Henry Ellard. You know, he had Dickerson. Well, Dickerson was gone, but we traded away Dickerson. But we had Greg Bell came in and did real good. Charlie White came in and did real good. The best offensive line in football. So Jim was one of those quarterbacks that were rare. You know, you think you get a young kid to come in and play the way he did. He could make all the throws, and he was tall enough to look over the defensive line and see him downfield. Everything was on time with Jim. See, Zampezi's offense was a timing offense. You know, the ball would be gone before the receiver makes his break. So the only way you can pick Jim off is if you're peeking. And if they see you peeking, they're going to run right by you.
Leroy, you also, there are so many great players, you know, in the generation prior to yours with the Rams, guys like Pekin Jones and Merlin Olsen and Rosie Greer. Did you have an opportunity to sit down with those guys and pick their brains?
Oh, yeah. I've talked to Rosie whenever I see him now. And my greatest claim to fame, okay? Here's my greatest claim to fame. Deacon had a function in downtown L.A. about 82 maybe. And he invited me to this function. I think there's a Rams function and Deacon Jones function. Anyway, I go down there, and Merlin Olsen says, "Hey, Leroy, come over here." I said, "What?" Merlin Olsen, he didn't say Leroy. Merlin Olsen called my name. Did Merlin Olsen know who I am? I walked over there. It was Merlin, Deacon, and Rosie. Wow. And they started talking to me. And you know, rest in peace, you know, Deacon, and rest in peace, you know, Merlin. But Deacon was a big part of my life when I had my charity. I do a Girls and Boys Cup tournament at Industry Hills Golf Course, and Deacon would come every year. And if we didn't raise enough money, Deacon would go on the microphone and walk around to each person's table and them to donate some money. So I still love Deacon. I talked to his wife 2 weeks ago, Elizabeth. She lives in Las Vegas. She's a sweetheart. And yeah, I have some fond memories of those guys. Man, it was like an honor to meet him.
Leroy, one more before we let you go. And speaking of functions, you've got a big event coming up called Legends and Leaders, Engaging, Inspiring, and Challenging the Next Generation of Innovators. Talk about that event.
Yeah, it's about, you know, giving kids alternatives to drugs and alcohol, you know. It's trying to get kids, you know, in high school. They're trying to get Roman Gabriel Jr., the third, I think, is whatever. His charity puts it on. Roman has memory problems, so he's not coming. But Roman Gabriel the third or junior, he's putting on his charity, and it's about keeping kids off drugs, educating them, giving them other avenues to pursue while they're in high school, and it's really helping the next generation of kids, you know, be off drugs, and also giving them the hope and tools to help them grow both mentally and physically.
Leroy, before we let you go, remind our listeners, how can we stay up to date with all the great things you're doing? You're a wonderful follow on social media. Let them know how they can find you.
Well, I'm on Twitter, I don't have a charity of my own, but I'm more than welcome. I really love the homelessness. So I work with different homeless programs. I'm really about, you know, inspiring young people to be better. You know, I think now, and so I don't really have a platform that I'm on. Follow me on Twitter. You know, I will always announce where I'm going, where I'll be next. I love the fans. I love people. So I'm easy to approach. And, you know, 'cause life is too short to be an asshole.
Amen. Leroy, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. You're a lot of fun, my friend. We hope we get the privilege of having you back on the show again soon.
Hey, Chris and Bob, my pleasure, man. Anytime, you guys. God bless you. Happy New Year.
You too.
Happy New Year, Leroy. Take care. All the best to you and your family. That is the great Leroy I tell you, you know, Leroy Irvin has got to be one of the most fun and energetic guys that we've had on this show, Bob. From the moment we said hello to the moment we said goodbye, you can feel the energy still running through that guy. He's so great.
The exactly, Chris. I was thinking the same thing. The room just lit up when I heard his voice. You know, great storyteller. And man, you know, the names he mentioned right off the bat, you get goosebumps. If you follow, you know, football back into the 70s and 80s and just those names he mentioned at the beginning and then at the end, you know, I've talked to some of those guys, Rosie Gray, these are legends, Chris. And man, for him to be up close and personal with some of these guys, and like he said, you know, he might not have the memory he might not have at as he did at one time, but he can remember a lot of that stuff because it's so impactful. But I think you agree with me, one of the more fun guests we've ever had, and a guy that we truly adore.
Absolutely right. And you can find him on Twitter, folks, at LARams47. So go out there, give him a follow. You'll be glad you did. All right, when Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive here. Two more great stories about guys out there doing great things in their communities, and then we're going to wrap up the show. We'll do it right on the other side of this real quick station break.